The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5. You're tuned into the all-new Freedom 106.5. 106.5.
And good morning to you once again on Freedom 106.5 FM. And now we join Mr. Jody White and his guests for Agribusiness Innovations. Good morning to you, Jody.
Morning, Tosca. Morning, Trinidad and Tobago. Welcome to another installment of Agribusiness Innovation. Of course, we are live every Thursday, 10 to 11 on Freedom 106.5 FM. And this show is a show where we talk about the business of agriculture, the innovations behind it, and of course, how sustainability meshes into that. And each week we bring guests from around the world, from a wide range of areas within the agricultural field, whether it is primary growers, whether it is scientists, professors, ministers, agroprocessors, we bring them all in one place. Now, today, our guest is based here in Trinidad and Tobago. I have Mr. Fernando Lopez of Giles Artisanal Foods. Fernando, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Jody. Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm good. So for the listeners, I invited our guest here because I saw that they make some different products with cassava. One of it is a cassava hash brown. So we're going to go and get into this conversation of how this business started, the nature of their products, where they see it, the successes, and all that good stuff. So, Fernando, first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself professionally.
Well, Jody, born and raised here, leaving school, I studied maritime engineering. I was working offshore. I still am working restarted working offshore. The business was really born during the COVID time when there was a big shutdown and, work was difficult to find. And that's where we really started pushing our cassava products. But by education and by trade, I'm actually a ship's engineer.
So, Giles, who is that?
Giles is my grandfather's middle name. The company was started by my father and myself. Originally, we were farming a piece of land that my grandfather had acquired late in his life, and we wanted to pay homage to him. So that's why we named the brand after his middle name, Giles.
Now, when you say farming, what types of things are you used to do on this farm?
Well, a lot of different, small sustainable crops, mostly seasonings. We had looked into more long form crops like corn and pumpkin. But we, just before the COVID shutdown, there was a large national drive for cassava for many reasons, one of which being the government was looking to find alternatives to wheat flour. Cassava flour is very healthy and gluten-free. So there were a lot of drives, there were a lot of incentives to farmers to increase cassava production. And so we planted cassava in a big way the year before the COVID shutdown. So during COVID, we were harvesting cassava and we had a plan to sell in wholesale to a particular a farming collective who would then have bought from us and then sold in the markets. But the price point shifted unexpectedly, and it wasn't profitable for us to sell to them the work that we were doing, the distance that we were traveling to the land, to sell to them at a price point just didn't make sense to us on the scale that we were working at, because we were very small scale, just my father and my siblings and myself. So we started selling cassava direct point of sale to whoever we knew. We were asking friends and family, whoever wanted cassava, and selling selling direct and even doing delivery during COVID time because no one was going out to the markets. But very often we would have overestimations because you don't want to, you ever want to harvest less than you actually need. So very often we came home at the end of the day, at the end of the week, with a lot of extra cassava. So we as a family started eating cassava in a big way, boiled cassava, fried cassava, anyhow you could imagine it. And one morning, we had leftover cassava fries from the night before, and my father decided to make hash browns. So he crushed all the fries together and seasoned them and fried them over to make cassava hash browns. And that evening, we still had more cassava left back. And I think it was my brother who asked, well, what are we going to have for dinner? And my father said, well, of course we're having cassava. And he said, well, what are we having it with? We have nothing else. Why, what are we going to have cassava with? Cassava and bread? And father said, yeah, of course, you have a cassava pie like you have aloo pie. And it just, something clicked in my head. You know, we have these fries, we have cassava, we have hash browns, we have pies. We could probably produce this and sell it prepackaged, ready to eat or frozen, ready for someone to cook. And it would be a lot more profitable than trying to sell fresh cassava. It would also last longer because fresh cassava is very, very volatile. Fresh cassava, you really need to peel it and work with it as soon as possible, preferably. Especially if you're going into food production, the limit is really 24 hours from harvesting. You really want to get that cassava because once it starts drying out, the cassava it loses its freshness quite fast. So that's what we did. We worked on a recipe for the hash browns. I don't like it. It took a little while. There was some trial and error. We had to look at a lot of different places in terms of food grade bags for sealing and packaging the product. We had to look at vacuum sealing versus regular bag sealing. So there was a lot of hiccups getting started, but by the end of 2020 we had a product that we started selling, you know, and just regular small business things from then on.
When y'all would have leftover cassava and you had it home, how much of it used to spoil at times on your hands?
Well, I'll be honest with you, I'm not a big family, but myself, my brother, my sister, my father, and myself and my brother are big eaters. So it never used to waste because we used to make sure and eat it. But we would end up with 3 or 4 pounds extra every day. And that might not sound like much, but 3 or 4 pounds of cassava is about 8 servings. Depending on the size of the person, you want about 1/2 pound to 1 pound of starch on your plate. Anybody who's listening might think, you know, anybody who weighs food would agree with me. Anybody who's, you know, if you go out there and you weigh a piece and you look at it and you realize, and you put it on your plate and you realize, wow, this is, it's a pound is the bigger side of a serving if you're taking a pound of cassava. So what it meant is that we definitely eat cassava as a full meal. Each of us ate cassava a full meal at least once a day at that point in time.
How scary was it then to actually decide that you want to do this agro-processing as a business, create these hash browns and create these fries as a business? Was it a scary decision? Because I know the risk for some people is a little bit overwhelming.
Well, Jody, I'll be honest with you. At this point, it was COVID time. I wasn't working. Nobody in the household had a steady job. What we were doing was working on the farm, you know, harvesting the cassava and driving around to deliver and sell fresh cassava. So moving from the fresh cassava to the production side wasn't a big or scary leap for us because it was a matter of bringing home the bacon. It's a matter of making ends meet, you know. And we took it in small steps. with, we use personal savings to capitalize the business. So I suppose in that sense, there was a slight element of, what if this doesn't work out? But the fresh cassava was barely holding us over, you know? So we all felt it was a risk worth taking. We'd be building something for ourselves. And I think honestly, if it wasn't for COVID, we may never have done it. But because of the situation we were in, there were all the right reasons at the right time to choose this way.
So it sounds that, you started it up, you bootstrapped it. Nothing is easy to start. Now, where did you first launch it? Who did you first sell these items to?
Friends and family, anyone on my contact list. You know, we advertise generally word of mouth, put out statuses on WhatsApp. I think we started a Facebook page in the early days, but I don't think any of us are as tech savvy as we would like. The Facebook page, unfortunately, has not had the kind of care that we would have liked to give it. We are still working on increasing that, the social media presence of the business. But it started off with friends and family, word of mouth. That was it.
People tend to say that the last person that buys from you is your friends. You had that experience?
Yes or no. Definitely, I was blessed in that I had a few friends in particular who they told me straight up that they were buying from me because they knew that I was out of work and I was doing this to support my family, and they bought it from me because they were willing to take a chance on me. And to be honest, the price point is not ridiculous, you know. The wedges are $20 a pound, and the cassava hash browns are $30 for a 10 pack, which is about a pound. So it wasn't a terrible risk for anyone to try, you know.
And your friend supported you then. When they got these items in their hand and they tasted it, they ate it, were they like, wow, I want to buy this again, not because you're my friend, but because I really like this product?
Absolutely. At first it was a hassle to get to get your first sales. As always, you have to convince people. Some people, oh gosh, I don't like cassava, I don't like this. But once someone has tried it, especially the hash browns, because the hash browns are well seasoned. I do have an interview in the early days. I think we were at one of the local business expos, and my father has been interviewed, and he said, you know, it was a point of pride for him because he doesn't like plain tasting food. You know, he loves well seasoned food. So the hash browns, it was important to us from the very beginning that they had a full flavor. And we have gotten a single negative comment about the seasoning in the hash browns. So once people have tried it, and our sales, really, that's been the biggest marketing strategy that we've ever been able to, is just samples. If we go out there and we have some freshly fried hash browns and we give samples to people have come up and said, you know, I'm not big on the cassava, but, you know, free food is free food. They take a sample and they immediately, you know what, hey, I want to buy, I'll buy a bag and take it home and try it some more, because the sampling is really, the flavor is what has been carrying us. It's what keeps getting us our repeat sales. It's what gets us in the door at any new place we try to open up into. And it is definitely the most necessary part of the business.
Without a background in food production,
what was it like, the learning process for getting everything right? And people underestimate how complicated some of these things are. Even as small as learning how to seal a bag is a little bit of a learning curve. What was that like for you and your family?
Well, thankfully, my father has a background in, he studied agricultural engineering at UWE many years ago, and he has kept with it. He's done short courses in agribusiness. So some of the more fine details were a little new to both of us, but he did have a very good idea in terms of what we would need, the standards that we would have to get for approvals and stuff, and what, you know, generally speaking, the overall process. It's funny you mentioned sealing bag, because that is, you'd be surprised how many times we've had to reseal packages. You know, all bag sealers are heat treated. You know, they melt the bag together to form the seal, and it's very easy to run the machine too hot and tear a bag. Or, you know, when you do multiple bags close together and you're trying to cut them into size, it's very easy to accidentally cut past the seal and ruin a bag and have to empty it out and reseal it again. So there were some growing pains, as with any company, any startup, any new attempt. But I wouldn't say that they were overwhelming to overcome.
There's a level of boldness that they have when they offer something for sale, and a level of confidence. And for some people, that standing up in front of a potential customer is scary. The first time you set up a table somewhere and your people passing you, and you have to have that level of bravery and confidence. You sound like you are somebody who is confident enough, and you know, you're able to communicate with people well. Am I correct?
I would. Sorry, excuse me. I would put myself about midway, to be honest with you, Jody. The main driving force, I have to give credit where credit is due, the main driving force for sales in our business has been my mother. My mother has always been the most extroverted of us. I used to tell people she couldn't stand in line at the bank for 5 minutes without talking to the person in front or behind her in the line. She is compelled to make friends, and you know, that's one of her greatest qualities. And the sales are just absolutely different when we're at the farmer's market, because we are at the farmer's market almost every weekend in the Savannah, Saturday mornings. You can find us there. My mom will always be there. And you can't walk past the store without her trying to get your attention. So every single body, if you'll glance in my direction, I might raise my hand, I might try to explain to you what we're offering, but people who walk in past and they have the grocery list in one hand and the bag in the other hand, and they're on a mission to get there, they're just there to buy what they need, I leave them alone. But not my mother, not at all. Anybody who's walking past the table has to get a good morning, how are you doing? Are you interested? And she's just outgoing on a level that isn't completely different from the rest of us. And if it wasn't for her, we wouldn't be able to keep doing this.
The splitting of duties in the family, in terms of you, your dad, your mom, producing, selling. Do you all have specific tasks that are assigned to people, or is it just things that naturally emerge?
Yeah, well, more naturally emerging. At this point, they're sort of streamlined, but it sort of naturally emerged because my father and I were doing more of the heavy labor in terms of actually harvesting the cassava, which we don't do ourselves anymore. By the way, we can no longer meet our own demand. It would be too much for us to try and farm our own cassava. So we source cassava from local farmers,
that we know having contacted and communicated with them that they're farming sustainably, that they are, you know, using all approved methods. We're trying to keep it as, you know, the name of the business is Giles Artisanal Foods. We are trying to maintain organic source for all of our food sources. It is a little difficult in Trinidad and Tobago because there's no official body that standardizes organic. So there's no label and there's no stamp of approval. But we like to, in our business deals, just for our point of pride, we like to keep it organic. But me and my father have those connections. So we go to the farmer's market, we buy and collect the cassava, we process the cassava, we cut it, peel it, boil it, freeze it, season it, mash it, press it into the hash browns. We do all of the manual labor. But my mom has always been more outgoing. And so she's always been the one contacting people, making cold calls. So it naturally emerged that we fell into the production role and she fell more into the sales role.
What about your other siblings? Are they involved in it as well?
They were very involved in the beginning when we were all at home during COVID. But as the COVID restrictions let up, my siblings found their own jobs and they do pass through from time to time and lend a hand when they can. But generally speaking, it's really a child of myself and my father, and my mother takes care of the sales. And even myself, I started back working offshore once things opened up, mainly to get more capital to try to expand the business. So whenever I'm home, I'm very active, but there's at least half the time while I'm offshore that my father has to do some of the production by himself. And I think at those times he calls on my siblings a little more regularly, but it's mostly my father in production, myself when I'm home, and my mom in sales.
Now, where or how large would you like this business to grow? Because I know some people say, listen, I'm happy for it to stay at a small manageable size. Some people say, listen, I want to become massive and around the world. What is your vision for this company and this business?
Ideally, if we could make it international, if we could export, would be fantastic. Right now, the five-year plan includes getting more retailers on board, selling to getting production to a level where we could sell wholesale to more retailers. It is right now the dream. We do sell to a few small retailers, so you can find us available in Bloom's, Maraval, and Digo Martin, and in Seafood Differently in Curep. But also there are a few restaurants that order our cassava wedges for use as sides in their restaurants. However, we're at that funny growing point for a business where we really need to bring to the next step is more of a leap, you know, and it's going to take a significant change in everything. We're going to have to bring in more labor. We're going to have to bring in more machinery. We're going to have to source more material. So everything has to increase by a big amount for us to reach a new level of capacity. And we're trying to work on that, but that's where the government's initiatives for small and micro businesses, and especially agri development, the government has made some inroads in these areas in recent years, and it's just navigating all of the paperwork and applications to really benefit from these things.
Now, with your dad, both of us. I mean, our parents are, of course, aging. Is there any fear that
it's going to come a point in time where he says, listen, I want to kind of step back from this kind of heavy role, or is he in it for good?
Well, I mean, he's definitely committed at the moment. Like I said, in really, we're looking at the next 5 years. We'd like to bring on labor and, you know, find a location that is not out of the family house. If we could get a location and bring any machinery and the labor that we want to, you know, I could definitely see him taking on a more managerial role, training new workers, you know, making more, managing the contacts on the purchasing end, where we purchase from different farmers, managing those contacts. There's not a lot of that to do right now, but he has been doing all of that. So he would definitely still, I think, take on a more managerial role in the next few years, provided that we can get to a point where we can afford outside labor. But I think it's something that he's committed to for at least the next 5 to 10 years.
Now, in 2022 also, there was a flood, and that flood caused cassava prices to skyrocket, I mean, go high. How did that affect you? Because, I mean, you had some time where you're using what you farm, and now you're growing. You can't farm as much as you need, so you need to supplement with purchasing. And the prices on the outside went up by at least 100%. How you all dealt with that?
Boy, that was one of our hardest times, I'll be honest with you. What it came down to was sort of a blessing in disguise, in that because we were sticking to smaller farmers that we knew personally, that we had contact with, who were farming in smaller amounts and were doing more organic farming and less large scale farming. Because as you get bigger, it's harder to stay organic. It's harder to be all natural. As you get bigger, you need to involve machinery. You need to involve stuff like industrial pesticides and fertilizers, because you just can't give each plant the attention that it needs on a scale that large. But because we were focusing on those kinds of farmers, they generally had most of the land that they would have farmed, or because they were more intimate with the land, they were able to salvage some of it. So we were still able to get some cassava at an increased price, but not so much increased that we were unable to make a profit. I think we were breaking even, maybe taking a slight loss in those 6 month period, and there was at least a 2 month period where we absolutely couldn't get cassava at all. But now that that has passed, and again, the government has continuously encouraged local farmers in the growing of cassava, there's more farmers getting involved, more areas being developed, and it's less likely the event to cause such a disruption of the market.
Yeah, I mean, that was a tough time, because we used to have people planting 20, 30, 40 acres of cassava at once. And then with COVID, it was like a perfect storm. COVID came and cassava went down to like 50 cents a pound, because of course people weren't consuming as much. Prices went right down and farmers didn't keep planting material. So planting material disappeared. Farmers weren't going to replant because they don't know what is going to happen. They don't know if in the next 2 years what the world is going to look like. So they weren't willing to put down the crops. And the loss of the planted material when the floods happened in 2022, that just exacerbated the situation. And now we're seeing a recovery where we're finding farmers planting at 10 acres and so again, but it was still a tough
a tough, tough time for people within this cassava industry. And the price has still held high. I mean, we now seen prices dropping back to what it used to be years ago. But the prices, I mean, it was difficult to process an item at those prices because your final product to the consumer would be too high. They wouldn't purchase it compared to what else is on the market. Now, it's about 10:30, and I have not yet taken a commercial break. So what I think we're going to do is that we're going to jump into a very, very short break. And when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation with Fernando. So now you have this in a couple locations. Tell me, what is your next step?
Well, the next step, Judy, is just to increase production so that we could get to even more areas. We are in the farmers market every Saturday. We still do direct sales to anyone who calls the business. We have the call cards. We have a Google business page. So anyone who contacts us, we have direct sales still. And direct sales in the markets on a Saturday farmers market in the Savannah on a Saturday morning. And we have these few retail outlets, as I said, Blooms in Digo Martin, Blooms in Maraval, and Seafood Differently in Cura. And we would
I
like
have a question here from a listener. They want to know, what is a cassava hash brown?
Well, it's basically what it says. It's a hash brown made from cassava instead of potato. If you're not sure or don't remember, maybe never heard of what a hash brown is, it's just grated or crushed potato, seasoned and generally fried, and almost like a burger, like a veggie patty. But we decided to use the cassava because that's what we had on hand. We season ours with a homemade blend of green seasoning, pimento, and garlic. And we pre-package them. We boil the cassava first, so we pre-cook them, and we package them frozen so that they can be popped straight from your freezer into a frying pan. You only need about half an inch of oil. You can fry it like a burger and flip it. You can deep fry it if you would really like. They do get a nice crispy outside and a lovely soft inside when you're frying them. They can also be air fried or even baked in an oven. They still come out very well. We suggest basting them or spraying the outside with a light layer of oil to help get a little bit of that crunchiness in still if you're baking or air frying. But yeah, that's what they are. Hash browns made with cassava.
Now, have restaurants been open to trying the hash browns? Because I know fries are something that, okay, they might say, yeah, but what do you say about the hash browns?
The hash browns, not so much. Although, just, I think a few months ago, we did our first sample of a larger style hash brown, more modeled as a vegetable patty, a vegetarian patty, for a restaurant here in Digo Martin. So it's Simply Gourmet in Simply Gourmet in Digo Martin. They're in Starlight Plaza. There we go. Simply Gourmet in Starlight Plaza has been taking our frozen cassava wedges for quite some months, and having seen our call card and knowing our products, asked about the hash browns, and after sampling them, asked if they could be made bigger to be made into a veggie patty. So we did some tweaking. We pressed a bigger patty and froze it and brought it for them to try, and they did enjoy it, and they have since just last month into this month been ordering our veggie patties in regular cassava and in vegan. We do have a completely vegan option because the normal frozen cassava involves egg and milk for binding, and obviously egg and milk, not vegan. So we do have a completely vegan option, which does not have egg or milk in the recipe.
You know, it kind of reminds me of Jamaicans have a dish called Bami. You familiar with that?
I think I've heard the name, but I'm not familiar with the process or the ingredients.
Bami, it looks like a thick burger patty. And I guess it's similar to the hash browns. And how they prepare it is that same thing, they would kind of grate it and squeeze it, press it into shape, salt it. And then before they fry it, they would dip it in coconut milk. And then they deep fry it. So it's kind of similar. But it's something that some of the listeners, if you're trying to still piece together what the hash browns are like, it's like that, if you're familiar with that as well. Now, what about other commodities? We've been talking about cassava all this time. What about plans to incorporate other commodities?
Yes, recently we have started on a small scale sweet potato wedges. Because most of our customers know us for the cassava, it hasn't quite caught on as much, but we do have sweet potato wedges. There was always a plan to branch out into other ground provisions. However, we are still in testing for the sweet potato hash browns. They don't seem to want to bind quite as well as the cassava. There's a difference with the starch and the two vegetables that is just making it a little tricky for us to nail down that recipe where we can be absolutely sure that when we make our product and freeze it and deliver it, that it performs the same way that our customers expect it to perform when it's fried. It doesn't cave in, it doesn't fall apart, it's crispy on the outside and soft on the inside. You know, we really don't want our quality to be affected. So we're still working on the sweet potato recipe for the hash browns, but we do hope to eventually incorporate yam, edibles, and other vegetables. But again, being a small family-owned business, we are trying to incorporate one thing at a time.
One of our listeners sent a message. They said, why not try combining the cassava with the sweet potato? It might make it stick better.
We do. We have tried a recipe like that. The problem is that you lose the sweet potato flavor. That's the problem we've been having. You're just not getting the sweet potato flavor as strongly as the cassava when we mix it in any ratio that is physically stable so that it stays together and it fries well. There's just not, the sweet potato flavor isn't coming out as strongly. So we're really trying to, it's just a little bit of tweaking and testing. And then, you know, anything that's being mass produced, there's one thing with making a recipe by hand in a bowl that can perform how you might expect, but to make a recipe that will be perfectly consistent on a large scale is slightly different.
That's true, eh? Now, what were the major challenges that you would have encountered since you started this business?
Well, Judy, I don't want to sound like a typical Chinese every day, every week, but finances, you know, a small business now starting up, you require lots of different things. You know, for us, it was food grade storage materials, getting food grade bags, a bag sealer. You know, to be able to do everything on the scale that we're doing it, we needed larger containers, a larger mixer. We needed an extra freezer, two extra freezers at this stage, to store all the material before we ship it out. You know, we actually added capacity right now where we need to look at potentially getting another freezer again, which puts us into the space where we need more physical space, more manufacturing space. So all of these things require investment. And most of the investment has come from myself and my father's personal savings. We're now starting, as I said, we started around COVID time, 2020. So it's 2024 now. We're now starting to kind of see a return on those investments. But we would really like to push and to see how far we can how big we can make this thing go. And that means even more investment.
And you know, one of the things is that people will always say, why you don't try this? Why you don't do this? And these businesses take so much capital and resources. I think the average listener sometimes may not. I'm going to give you all some figures here. Just a bin, a food grade bin that might be a foot wide by 3 feet long is about 300 TT, and that's one. And that could probably maybe only hold about 4 or 5 pounds of cassava. You know, you're looking at stainless steel utensils, just a stainless steel table by itself, proper food grade, probably running about $3,000 to $4,000. Proper food grade. These things are not cheap. A commercial walk-in freezer, something that is maybe just 10 feet by 10 feet, which is small, 10 foot by 10 foot, might run in the range of freezer about 75. So, you know, it's difficult, because when you consider that you're selling a food product where you might sell it for $30 and you only making $3, $4, $5 profit on a bag, you see how much you have to sell just to cover the cost of those things. So it's very much a challenge when you're bootstrapping a business, and bootstrapping pretty much means you're using your own money to try to develop this. It is a journey. It is hard. It takes time. And then you have the things that go wrong all the time. So, you know, financing is something that I think most businesses will always say, hey, that is a trouble that we have, but that's the reality of it. Have there been times where you thought to yourself, you know what, this is too much stress, I want out?
Boy, who could ever say that they've never had doubts? You know, there've definitely been times where you wonder to yourself, is this going somewhere? You know, am I moving forward or am I just marking time? Could I have maybe found another job somewhere and worked at that job and have gotten 2 promotions? And now, you know, there's always going to be doubts. There's always going to be doubts in the back of your mind, but you can't listen to the negative thoughts. You really can't. You have to just grit your teeth, believe in yourself, and trust your gut and push in what you know to yourself that you really want to do. Because no matter what you do in this life, there's going to be something for you to look back and regret. And you have to just make your decisions in a way that you're comfortable living with them.
Then when those things happen, when you get those doubts, what makes you decide to then stay within this business?
Stubbornness. For one part, those who know me well, who may or may not recognize my name or my voice out there, any one of my friends would tell you, he's a stubborn one. But pride also, it's a remarkable thing to build something for yourself. And everyone out there who's listening, who has done it for themselves, I'm sure you're nodding to yourself right now. And it's just, when we were growing, when we were farming stuff, you know, planting something in the ground, taking care of it, watching it grow, nurture, and know that you provided that environment that caused this thing to grow and provide fruit and supply food and shade and shelter for someone is a remarkable feeling. And building a business, no less so. It's like caring for a child or taking care of the elderly, somebody that you care about. there's just something about building something for yourself and watching it grow that is very hard to replace. It's very hard to compare to anything else.
Are your parents listening to the show right now?
I don't think they're able. Unfortunately, they're both a little busy, which is why it fell to me to do the interview. But they are very interested in listening to it when it comes out as a podcast, I'm sure.
Well, you know what? I think that it is worthwhile for you to maybe say the names and just kind of recognize them.
Of course. My father, Christian Lopez, who, if it wasn't for his love of agriculture, this would not even have been a dream. And my mother, Maria Lopez, who, if she wasn't the outgoing and extroverted people person that she was, we would be still trying to get our first bat sold. So thank you very much, Mom and Dad, for everything that you do.
You know, and I would say just kind of keep at it. It's a journey. It's a lovely journey. You know, keep at it, and you're going to see that the fruits of your labor, everything is gonna pay off soon enough. Now, are there any locations that you want to get in, that you have trouble getting in, or do you think that you're at the point now where your distribution is at a level that you're able to manage?
Right now, we're managing distribution for the areas and the retailers that we are partnered with. We would like to, we're actually in talks with another partner, but I won't call names anymore. We're still working out details. And but they're more of a middle agent. So we would sell to them, and then they would distribute to many different areas. But one of the goals has always been to get into a nationwide grocery store chain, whether that be Budget Foods, True Value, Massey, but that takes a order of magnitude of production that we're just not quite close to yet. So we would really like, hopefully, sometime in the next 5 to 10 years to be on a shelf anywhere in the country. You can go around the corner, or at least a 10 or 15 minute drive down the road, and you can go into a grocery store and find us on your shelf all across the country. But for now, that's a fingers crossed, very near future goal.
Yes, and Dora, I understand that, because grocery distribution is not easy, especially when you have a product that is frozen, because you get to a supermarket and sometimes you just have to wait an hour or two just for a receiver to come to your sign the pages, you know, get all the documents done to then allow you in. And then you have to go in and pack the goods out. And being frozen, it's not something where you could just kind of leave on a table and hope somebody packs it in there for you. You have to go and do it yourselves and monitor and make sure things go good. So take your time, do what you could manage. It is not easy. Sometimes I remember when we did distribution, it's hard to do more than maybe 4 or 5 locations in a day because of how long you have to wait to actually be received, and then the cost of doing it. You know, when companies have 30 or 40 products, they don't mind waiting the 2 hours. But when you only have something that's niche and you're only going to drop off 12 or 24, it's not always worthwhile. So it is good. Do what you can manage and grow as you manage. And then eventually you will see everything paying off. Now, for our listeners who want to get their hands on your cassava-based hash browns or cassava wedges, tell them one more time where they can find them.
So you can find us if in any west at Bloom's Digo Martin or Bloom's Maraval. You can find us on the shelves of Seafood Differently in Curep area. And every Saturday morning in the farmer's market in the Savannah, you can find us more to the western end of the market at our table with a big sign, Jazz Artisanal Foods. My mother and her bright smile will gladly entertain all your questions and happy to offer you a sample and to let you
quickly buy two or three bags from us.
Now, but, based on your experience in business, now, what advice would you offer a listener who would like to get into agro-processing?
Do your research. Just, you know, it's super important to understand what it is you're getting into. Because as I said, many people might think it's you're just cooking. You know, we cook every day in our kitchens. What is different about making our food business? And the thing is that to be recognized anywhere, you're going to need approvals. And those approvals have strict qualifications. Like I said, everything down to your utensils, your workspace, any containers need to be food grade. You know, just for the simple fact of when we're moving from selling from people direct to moving into a retail outlet, we needed labels. And to get a label, that means you have to get you know, you have to have an idea of what is in your product. You have to have a logo. You have to get a barcode, which sounds simple, but you have to go to their people who sell barcodes. You can't just make up your own barcode. You have to go to people who have bought barcodes from the international list of barcodes, and then they'll sell it to you to put on your label so that a retailer can put you on their system. And all of these things are things that you might not think about originally, but you need to understand what it is you're doing, and you're going to need to do your research.
Now, if there's anything that you would ask of the government to do for the industry, now it could be for the fresh produce industry, for farmers, or for processors. Is there anything that you would ask?
I think the government has a few, trying to be very political here, I'm not saying one way or the other, but the government does have a few systems in place. I think the main focus needs to be accessibility, because these programs that the government has are not always advertised as well as it could be to farmers, to especially rural farmers. You know, some of the farmers are not the most computer literate, you know, they're not, and so they may not be as familiar with all the online places and the online spaces where you need to go out to particular sites and download applications and send these applications in electronically. Some of them, you know, live very far away, and so they can't drive all the way into Port of Spain to spend a whole day just to make an application for something. You know, if they can, if there can be more regional locations just for administrative processing of some of these things, I think the focus needs to be on making these things as accessible as possible to as many of our local farmers and local small business owners as possible. And that's the single biggest thing that they can do is, it sounds easy coming out of my mouth. I know it means more public servants. It means more people, more manpower, more dedication, more funds. But I think that's the biggest change that's going to make the biggest difference in the long run.
You know, Freedom on 6.5 FM, we do encourage people to speak their minds. And I think that your statement was very constructive. And I would share your sentiments on that. Now, it's just about a minute and a half to 11 o'clock, which means that our time on this program is coming to an end. Fernando of Giles Artisanal Foods, thank you so much for spending this Thursday morning with us and the listeners here on Freedom 106.5 FM. Do you have any closing remarks before we go?
If you haven't tried cassava hash browns before. Look up Jazz Artisanal Foods online. You can get any of our contact numbers, email, we're on Instagram. Shoot us a message, send us an email, give us a call. We're happy to deliver. And once you try it, we're sure that you'll keep coming back for more.
Wonderful. Now, this has been Agribusiness Innovation, Freedom 106.5 FM. On Thursday next week, we, of course, will be back here with another episode. Tune in for more. Tosca, now it's back to you in the studio.
The best insight, instant feedback, accountability. The all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5.